Welcome. Welcome to Seeking Best Practices, a conceptual framework for planning and improving evidence-based practices. I'm your moderator. I'm Andrea Young from CDC's Office of State, Local, State, Tribal, Local, and Territorial Support. We call it OSTILTS for short. I'm excited about today's presentations. We have three distinguished presenters today. They're going to help us get to some core objectives related to describing a conceptual framework that's soon to be published, as well as discussing how the framework has been utilized and adapted and interfaces with other national strategies and programs such as the Community Guide and Healthy People 2020. And we will begin our discussion with Lorene Spencer, and I'd like to give you a little introduction to her. She will be providing us the overview of the framework. Lorene is a public health advisor in the Applied Systems Research and Evaluation Branch within the Office of State, Tribal, Local, and Territorial Support at CDC. She's been with CDC since 2002. She has facilitated several cross-agency initiatives at CDC, such as the one she's going to be presenting on today. She holds a bachelor's science degree in nursing from Medical College of Georgia and an MBA from the University of West Georgia. Following Lorene, we will have Dr. Shauna Mercer speaking, and she is the chief of the Community Guide branch at CDC and director of the Guide for Community Preventive Services, also known as the Community Guide. The Community Guide is partly what she'll be presenting on, which is, as I'm sure everyone in this audience knows, is the preeminent source of evidence-based recommendations about effective community-based programs, services, policies for improving health. Her work focuses on engaging policymakers, practitioners, evaluators, researchers, and building the evidence base. So it's a nice connection to the work that Lorene will be presenting on. And then finally, we'll hear from, last but not final, we'll have input from Colleen Barbero, who is a data analyst with the Center for Public Health System Science at Washington University in St. Louis. She has a master's in public policy administration and is pursuing her doctoral degree, very close, in public policy analysis. She has experience researching environmental, community development, and public issues from a policy perspective. And Colleen will be giving us, presenting information on how she has actually kind of taken the framework, adapted it, and applied it to a very specific context. So we'll have a nice overview of from those different perspectives, with our hope is to be able to actually build towards a nice, robust discussion of the utility of the framework for practitioners in terms of being able to identify best practices when perhaps there is not an abundance of evidence to support and facilitate decision-making and planning for practitioners, as well as to provide somewhat of a roadmap or guide in terms of how one will go about building evidence base for those practices where we don't have a lot at this moment in time. The format will be each presenter will give their presentation, and if you have a clarifying question, please don't hesitate to raise your hand and ask it. But if you have a really kind of burning conceptual question that we want to tackle, we prefer that we leave those types of questions to the end, and I'll facilitate a discussion to your interests. All right? So good morning, and thank you for coming to on this last day of the conference. We appreciate your participation.
Good morning. I'm Lorene Spencer. Thank you again. I echo Andrea's thanks for being here so early on Wednesday morning, the last day of the conference, very dedicated, and we really want to get your input. So we really hope at the end that we can, as Andrea said, have a very robust discussion. I have to tell you, this is really going to inhibit me. I'm used to standing and walking around, and so I hope that it's not going to be distracting with my using my hands. I don't think I'm Italian, but I do use my hands a lot. So. Let's see if we can get this going. There we go. So, okay, let me just say that none of us have any personal or financial commercial interests relevant to this presentation. The session of objectives that I will be talking about is to describe the conceptual framework, discuss how the framework has been adapted and utilized for different contexts, or actually that's the overall discussion, and discuss feedback and utility of the framework. So getting right into it, what I'll be talking about is sort of reflecting on existing practice methodologies, talk about the intent and background for the best practices framework, give you a definition that we use for this work of public health practice, talk about the components of the framework, and that's public health impact and quality of evidence. Then I'll introduce the actual conceptual framework, talk some about the implications and limitations, summarize, and then leave time at the very end of the panel discussion for questions and discussion. So as many of you are very aware who work with evidence-based practices, there is lots of existing practice review methodologies. There are systematic reviews such as Cochrane Collaboration, Community Guide, the Diffusion of Effective Behavioral Interventions. There's a National Resource Center with Promising Practices Guidebook, the Healthy Communities Institute, and a lot of published literature, such as Brenna and Glasgow, and we have a literature review at the end that we will show you as well. What we did is we sort of talked about what does best practices mean. You know, with a lot of people use this term best practices. What does it really mean? You know, how do you get at best practices? What is the criteria that people use to determine what is the best practice? And so what we did is we wanted to offer public health practitioners a framework, and this is really for practitioners, for selecting, validating, and promoting effective practices to improve public health services and the health status of the community. And we did this based on the impact of the practice as well as the quality of the evidence that's available for that practice. And what we did is come up with some consistent terminology, criteria, and this does complement, it does not exceed or in any way negate any of the existing systematic reviews or rigorous practice evaluations that's already out there. The intent of the best practice framework was to generate practice-based evidence that can expand the quality of evidence across the spectrum of practices. And we'll talk a little bit more about this later on in the framework. So the background for this was in June of 2010, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention's, our office, I finally call it the Office of Stilts, convened a work group, and the work group intent was to create a framework for defining a continuum of evidence-based practices, and we wanted to be sure that we had some criteria and guidance for how you assess then and score supporting evidence of practices. And in 2011, we did develop and implement a very informal pilot test that included both programs internal to CDC and also included some external programs. People who are working in public health in the field, as well as people who were doing some performance improvement, quality improvement types of activities as a part of the FOA that CDC and OSTILTS had put out. And in 2012, Healthy People 2020 actually began to use the evidentiary component of the framework to identify resources that they now are putting on their website for people to use to help people achieve some of those Healthy People 2020 objectives. And we do have a manuscript that we developed this year that we hope will be published the end of this year or first of next year in the Preventing Chronic Disease Journal. It has been accepted for publication. So the definition of public health practice that we use for the purpose of our work was defined as field-based or research-tested actions intended to affect a positive change. Practices could include interventions, programs, strategies, policies, procedures. We really wanted to make it very, very broad. So it really would encompass a lot of the 10 essential public health services and other type of related activities. And we also wanted to have activities that were designed to improve specific outcomes, such as morbidity, mortality, disability, quality of life. So as you can see, it was a really, really broad definition, trying to get at and not leave out, sort of be more inclusive than exclusive of practices. So the considerations for practice that we looked at was two interrelated components that were of primary importance in the work, the minds of the work group for examining practices, and that was public health impact and quality of evidence. And I did want to say that this work group, we'll have the names at the end of this slide presentation, but it really, we tried to include a broad array of disciplines from across CDC. So we had scientists, we had evaluators, we had public education, health education folk. We had just a really broad array of folks that were included. And it was interesting, it turned out to be a 33-member work group, which was pretty large. And we had to sort of divide it into two separate working groups to be sure that we could get the work done in the time that we were given to get this done. So the public health impact could be examined using five elements, and one of those was effectiveness. And this is going to sound very familiar because it's, you know, you see it out with Brennan's literature and others. So we really did try to use information that was already existing to inform the work. And effectiveness, the definition we used was the extent to which the practice achieves the desired outcome. Reach, that's the extent that the practice affects the intended and critical populations. Feasibility was the extent to which the practice can be implemented. Sustainability, extent to which the practice can be maintained and achieve desired outcomes over time. And transferability, extent to which the practice can be applied and or adapted across a variety of contexts. So we really wanted to get at some of the cost issues, which really comes into the feasibility, sustainability, and transferability piece. And, of course, the whole idea was that this would be these would be ethically sound, that there would be something that has positive impact and not negative impact, which was why we included that in our definition in the beginning. And then the quality of evidence to support that public health impact. We looked at several different literature sources, and we came up with these four that you see again in literature. This is not new stuff, but it's weak field-based evaluations or summaries in progress that has plausible impact, and we gave some examples of that, abstracts, book chapters, without peer review. Could be moderate quality of evidence, intervention evaluations without peer review of practice or publication have evidence of impact. And that could include peer-reviewed abstracts or presentations, case studies with appropriate evaluation or evaluation reports. Strong evidence, and that's case control or cohort analytic reviews or studies, peer-reviewed journals. And this would include your non-systematic review of published intervention evaluations. So it's published in peer-reviewed journals, but it's non-systematic reviews. And then your rigorous includes those systematic reviews, such as your meta-analysis, and this is intervention evaluations or studies with rigorous systematic review. And this would include your guide to community service, the DEBI, diffusion of effective behavioral interventions, Cochrane reviews, and some of those. So then we put these two things together and developed this framework. And the idea of the framework is that it kind of combines your public health impact with the quality of evidence to support that public health impact along a continuum. And so, as you can see, the impact with your five criteria, and the idea is the impact goes from high impact or low impact to higher impact to build that evidence base so that you're building it to get to that best practice and you know what you need to look at. The idea was to give practitioners an idea of what you need to look at to evaluate, to build that evidence base, because that's one of the struggles we keep hearing from our practitioners about how they're struggling with practice and evaluation in the field. When we first started this work, I actually met with someone at DeKalb County that was doing some seatbelt practices, and they really, you know, she said, we really are doing some great practices out here, and we really think there could be best practices, but we're not really sure how to evaluate it or how to document what we're doing. And so when we talked with her about the ideas we were having, she really was very enthusiastic and really thought that this would really help them in adding to the evidence base. She said, we really want to add to the evidence base. We want to, you know, publish and make this a best practice, but we're not really sure how to go about doing that. So the idea of this was to give some guidance or some ideas to public health practitioners to inform the work that they're doing out in the field. So we came up with this continuum of practices, and it goes from emerging to best. So your emerging practice are going to be those practices that are assessed through field-based summaries or evaluations that are in progress that show some evidence that's suggestive of effectiveness and at least plausible evidence of the other criteria of reach, feasibility, sustainability, and transferability. The promising practices would be your practices assessed through unpublished intervention evaluations that have not been peer-reviewed but demonstrate some evidence of these criteria of impact. Leading practices would be practices assessed through peer-reviewed studies or non-systematic review of published intervention evaluations that show growing evidence of effectiveness and then some combination of these other elements. And then your best practices would be those practices assessed through systematic reviews of research and evaluation studies that demonstrate effectiveness and growing evidence of reach, feasibility, sustainability, and transferability. So the idea was to help people in looking at practice-based evidence, and what I fondly like to say, practice-based evidence that leads to evidence-based practice. And that's really what the idea was. And we know that there are a lot of wonderful practices out there that may not have the evidence, and or it may be effective in one place, and they're not sure whether that can be translated or transferred to another setting. So this would hopefully give people some ideas of what they may want to do or how they may want to assess that to see if it actually could be replicated or, you know, if it could be moved into maybe the best practice or leading practice status. So the implications for practice is that what we've heard from our practitioners when they piloted this program and other folks across CDC is that this could assist with some quality improvement activities, so it could help them in identifying opportunities for improvement as well as understanding the evidence base of new practices that can be tested and implemented through quality improvement methods. It could help with strategic planning, potentially providing a level of evidence-based decision-making to support areas that are working and identify strategic areas that need more focus. It could help maybe with state and community health assessments and improvement plans. We know that community needs assessment is something that's being mandated by IRS now. And so this may support health departments in helping to prioritize and assess what interventions to use based on differing levels of evidence. Accreditation, it can assist health departments in seeking accreditation through the Public Health Accreditation Board with standards and measures pertaining to advancing the science of public health domain 10 and to contribute and apply the evidence base of public health. And also with programmatic planning and improvement, it can support programs in making decisions and prioritizing interventions based on differing levels of evidence. And it can give some guidance on how to build the evidence base for specific types of interventions or strategies. So there are certainly limitations to this framework, and we're hoping to hear from you today some ideas that you have for how maybe it could be strengthened or tweaked or maybe the utility of the framework. We know that the elements of the frame of the impact component do not translate to the continuum as does the quality of evidence. For instance, the quality of evidence, you have the weak, moderate, strong, rigorous. We don't have some of the same. The idea is it goes from a lower to a higher level of impact, but we don't have the same elements for that impact. Some elements of the impact component are challenging to assess. We know that the transferability, sustainability piece is very challenging to assess. Reliably classifying a practice using the framework is dependent on the end user's background, perspective, and skill level. We found that out in the pilot test, depending on who's actually assessing the practice. If it's someone who's very familiar with the practice, then they may assess it a little bit differently than someone who's a scientist, you know, who's looking at it from a different perspective. So that was something that certainly will need to be evaluated and much more. The framework has not been fully evaluated. As I said, we did an informal pilot test, but it will certainly need a lot more evaluation. And it's still very conceptual. Practical questions about how to use the framework still remain. We do think that it can be very informative for people and inform the work that they're doing at this point in time. So advancing and refining the framework, we do have staff members from people at CDC, different CDC programs that are testing the framework and considering such issues as training validity, intra and inter-rater reliability. Additional tools certainly are needed to help guide users in consistently examining the evidence related to a given practice across diverse circumstances. And as I mentioned, we really could benefit from input by diverse users and stakeholders to inform an iterative process of improvement and refinement over time. And we certainly hope you will give us some feedback about that today. So in summary, this approach does build on and complement existing initiatives at CDC and also in the field. It's a key goal for this framework is to build practice-based evidence. That's something that's been called for by many public health leaders. Larry Green and many people in the field are calling for practice-based evidence. And the value of the framework does lie in offering a suggested common lexicon and processes to strengthen the evidence for public health practice. And we offer this conceptual framework in hopes of really starting a dialogue about among researchers, practitioners, evaluators, funders, and other decision makers about this common lexicon for what we mean when we say best practices or emerging practice or whatever term that we want to use. This was not done without the support of many, many people. Andrea here beside me, Anita McLeese, Craig Thomas, other within OSLT have certainly informed this a lot. And as you can see, there are many, many members that were a part of the best practices work group that included folks, as I said, from many different disciplines and many different programs across the agency. And some of those names you may recognize, such as Linda Anderson, who's been around a really, really long time, and Charles Collins, and some of those folks. And here is a bibliography. This is going to be on the APHA website if you want to download it and or listen to it again. So any clarifying questions before we move on to the next speaker?
Lorraine, one thing you might do, because it's not in the bibliography, is let people know the journal that this was published in.
I think I put it in the bibliography. Yeah, right here, Spencer. Yeah.
Sorry, I missed it.
Yep. So it's in the... Preventing Chronic Disease Journal. And we can certainly let you know if you're interested when that comes out.